Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Well, as folks in Texas struggle with flooding and waters continue to rise and people need help, we are enjoying beautiful weather, which will continue for the next 2 days to come. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy with temperatures in the upper 70s. Starting on Wednesday and on through the weekend, we should be seeing mostly sun with highs in the 80s. The week after that, more sunny skies with temperatures in the low 70s. Yesterday, KHOI was part of Worldly Goods Reuse, Repurpose, Recycle Rummage Sale on Main Street in Ames. We want to thank Worldly Goods for this opportunity. Thank you also if you donated articles for us to sell. We made a grand total of $1,385 with things that you donated, including you, Cynthia McClure, who is engineering today's show and who donated great items. Cynthia and I are aspiring to reach $1,500, right? And we're thinking we can raise the remaining $155 with a bake sale. And Cynthia's a great cook, as some of you may know. Cynthia, I think you're planning to make some of your Rice Krispie cakes. Cynthia's turning on a mic here.
I'm turning on a mic. I convinced Ursula that if I put Rice Krispies into Star Wars molds and then drench it in chocolate, people will be interested in it.
Yeah, so, you once made R2-D2 with Rice Krispie, and Tia was a hot item.
Yeah, I made a full, well, not full size, because that's huge, but I mean a fairly large Rice Krispies treat made out of two slabs of R2-D2, and then I made a flourless chocolate Han Solo in carbonite cake. So and, chocolate goes well, Rice Krispies go well. I think we could, I think individuals that are listening, their children, their grandchildren, grandparents would be interested in Rice Krispie treats, which are gluten-free, and anything drenched in chocolate, even white chocolate would be good. Yeah.
And 155 is not that much. We can do that.
I would make a lot.
Yeah. So don't be intimidated by Cynthia's baking talents.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't be intimidated. No. If you have something you feel you could contribute to a bake sale, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878. And I think we could have a really fun, whimsical bake sale and come in with that last $155. And we want to buy some really nice reception room furniture with all this money. So
we are getting past the duct tape and bailing wire here at KHOI.
Yeah. And we want our guests to be comfortable and in a beautiful environment.
And we do appreciate everybody that makes this happen.
Yes, and thank you to all of you who helped with the booth yesterday. It was really a great team effort, and it paid off. So thank you. Thank you. And thank you again to Worldly Goods and Andrea, an intrepid organizer. Last Thursday, August 24th, the first of several school board candidate forums was held at the library. It was a packed house with some attendees standing in the back and sides until additional chairs were brought in. This first forum was sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County. There are three open seats on the Ames School Board this year, and there are four candidates who have filed paperwork to run for these seats, one of whom is an incumbent. And to everybody's surprise, another candidate announced on the day of the forum that he would be running as a write-in candidate, and he was allowed to participate in the forum as well. The moderator, Nancy Halverson of the League of Women Voters, began by asking each candidate to give a statement in which they shared something about themselves and why they were running for school board. Our reporter, Gail Seiler, was at the site, and she took some recordings for us for you to hear.
Hello, I'm Tim Rasmussen, an Ames High grad. I actually went to Kate Mitchell, went to Welch Junior High, grew up down on East Lincoln Way. If you want a picture where I grew up, you get down into the floodplain, what is now Nickel and Associates, straight across from where UPS is. That was my house, and my dad's junkyard surrounded the house. And so grew up in a junkyard down on East Lincoln Way in the floodplain, and it's the type of place where when you went outside at night to feed the cats, some of the cats were possums. And so it wasn't exactly an easy upbringing, but it was the upbringing that we had. And so I had parents that didn't really come to those parent-teacher conferences much. My mom did attend a lot of them, but Dad never stepped foot inside that elementary building, never stepped foot inside Welch Junior High, and never stepped foot inside Ames High School, never saw a sporting event. it was an interesting thing that to grow up in a junkyard with an alcoholic father that was abusive to my mother. And I look back on that upbringing, and the two things that I know got me through that and made me successful were those teachers at Kate Mitchell Elementary that had me focused on that I was going to college. after getting my degree in education, after teaching for 6 years, and then going into business, I started looking at this. How can I give back to my community? Serving on school board was the perfect place that I felt like I could give back to this, to the kids of this town. I had an amazing experience going to the schools in this town. We have some big changes coming up in the next 4 years in this school district. A few of the things that are going to happen somewhere in the next 4 years, hire a new superintendent. We are going to attempt to bring forth a bond to build a new high school, and we have started a program to attempt to actually address the achievement, the racial disparity achievement gap in this school district. If you think about the superintendent search, I've worked closely with Dr. Taylor after serving as board vice president for two of my 4 years on the board. I've judged those qualities that it takes to be a good leader in the educational leader of an entire district, and I think that I'd be a good person to be in that room to help make that decision as to who this next superintendent is going to be. In regards to the high school, the time has come to build a new high school. With Mike Espeset and Bill Talbot deciding that they are no longer going to be on the board, I would be the only person on that board if I'm elected again that has construction experience and project management experience. In regards to the disparity gap, if you think back on where we were 4 years ago, we had a graduation disparity gap. Jonas Michael came up with a plan. Teresa Simpson and I encouraged him to expand that plan. And this past year, we graduated 95% of our African-American students. I'm proud of that.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Monique Binken. It's really humbling and an honor for me to be here tonight, and I'm so thankful to all of you who took time out of your beautiful evening to come and hear us talk about the school board. It's really beautiful that you would do this for our children and for our community, so I want to thank you. So I am an assistant professor at Iowa State University. I teach in the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice Studies. My training is that I completed a joint JD PhD program in psychology and the law. So I am a clinical psychologist. I have a PhD in clinical psychology and I'm also an attorney. My training in clinical psychology really bridges all areas of childhood development. My specialty is in juveniles, so I worked with juveniles in really any setting that you could think of. Here at Iowa State, I teach in the criminal justice program. I teach about the bad things that people do to each other. I help people understand the ways in which society formulates what we think of bad actions and how society responds to those bad actions. I also teach students about the law. And my area of research is in mentally disordered offenders. I study alternative adjudication programs. In particular, I study mental health courts. I also help jurisdictions and organizations deal with issues of ethnic and racial disproportionality in complex systems. So I will consult with the state, I'll consult with DHS, I'll consult with a lot of organizations who are dealing with some of the issues that our school board is dealing with. In terms of what my qualifications are, what I understand and what I work in are systems and really helping complex systems deal with complex problems, particularly as they pertain to young children. I'm also an educator, so I teach at Iowa State, and I teach the product of the public school system on a daily basis. And I understand what students are coming out of the public school education with and what are the barriers to them being successful in the world, because I see it on every day. I'm also a parent. This is my husband, Brian. I married my high school sweetheart. We've been together for 27 years. We have two children in the district. They are in the third grade and the fifth grade. The reason I'm doing this is it became clear to me that it was important for me to be active in my own community in a different way. And so I'm willing to serve in this capacity because what I've become aware of is that there are problems happening in our own district in areas in which I have particular expertise and can be useful. So if the community is willing to give me the opportunity, I'm more than willing to serve. So thank you for your time.
I am Jamette Colton. I am originally from Santiago, Chile. I've lived in Ames for 17 years. I live here with my husband, Chase, our 10-year-old son. His name is Tiago, and I love Ames. Ames has welcomed me, has loved me, has empowered me, and I feel that everyone that is in Ames should feel the way I do about Ames. It is very important to me that people are engaged with the community. I work as an educational assistant at Fellows for 5 years. I'm also an interpreter for the school district for Ames. I've been working a lot with organizations, volunteering, and because of my work with equity and inclusion, I was honored to receive the 2017 Ames Humanitarian Award. And that work reflects the reason why I'm running, And I'm running because I want to strengthen the relationship the board has with the community. I want to broaden the perspective of the board and bring voices that they're not always included in the policymaking decisions. And I can do all of that because I have deep ties to this community. I build bridges. Every time I meet somebody, I'm like, we have a connection now. I'm honored to be here. I had a backpack when I came to the U.S. Now I'm sitting with this amazing candidates and a possibility on the seat on the school board. So I would love your support on September 12th.
I'm Gina Perez. This is amazing. I did not expect this great of a turnout. I grew up in Wisconsin. I've been in Ames for 16 years. My husband is here as well, and I've got two kids that are 12 and 7 in the school district. They're both boys, and I come from a family of teachers. I'm the only person in my family who's not a teacher, including three siblings and both parents. They're either current or retired teachers. I also work at the Department of Transportation, and I do a lot of project management and facilitation, so I have a lot of experience with that. The things that I want to focus on are our teachers, because like I said, when I grew up in Wisconsin and my family being teachers there, the changes that happened with the legislature up there and collective bargaining were a very big impact on my family. Two of my siblings were teachers at the time in Wisconsin, and one of them ended up moving to Minnesota and retiring from Minnesota, and the other one ended up going to work for a private school because he's treated better at a private school than he is in the public schools. I don't want that to happen here with the changes that happen with collective bargaining here in Iowa. So I think it's wonderful that the current board did a two-year contract for our teachers. In 2 years, when that contract is up, we need to make sure that we have a teacher-friendly board so that our teachers can continue to get what they need. Another thing that I also want to focus on is communication. There have been some issues with communication between the public and between the existing school board and administration. Things have gotten volatile. Thankfully, the school board has done a lot to work on forums to have more two-way communication. Part of what I do, as well as project management at the DOT, is facilitation, and I get people to talk to each other. So that's something very near and dear to me, is getting people to communicate and to talk to each other and diffusing situations. The other thing that I want to focus on is our special needs kids and the achievement gap. There are a lot of my personal friends that have paid for private tutoring for their children, and that helps them, but that tells me that there's something lacking there. What concerns me more, though, are the people that can't afford for the private tutoring for their children, because those children are falling through the cracks and not getting the help that they need.
I wasn't supposed to be here tonight. You probably read in the paper, where is he or isn't he? And I kind of held off for a long time because I had to get a clean bill of health with my doctor, and I got that today, that my MRI was perfect. So here I am, going to get my last shot for the teachers and kids of Ames, Iowa, which to me, Ames is one of the best school systems in the state, and we have some of the best kids in the state. Buildings do not make high-level students. It's the student that we have in Ames, Iowa, high-level educated students, but above all, we have some of the best teachers in the state of Iowa. I was raised on the farm. My grandfather worked in a coal mine. My grandfather never went to school one day in his life. He ran from home, worked in a hotel on Mackinac Island, and that's why my grandfather really loved for me to get into education. I've been a retired teacher for 35 years. I have done student teaching for 14 years at Iowa State University. I've been a scout leader. I'm on the church trustee board and foundation. I was Iowa's science teacher of the year in the K-8 bracket. I have a wife of 58 years. I have three children. This is my fourth time running on the school board. Had a lot of experience. I was on the board when we built the middle school, which was sorely needed at that time. So I know a little bit about construction and construction managers. In fact, I've been about 50 different schools from Waukee, Iowa, clear up to Hubbard, Iowa. And I've been a supervisor from kindergarten up to high school seniors. And one of the toughest classes that I ever observed was kindergarten.
This is Local Talk on KHOI, and you're listening to excerpts from a forum held last Thursday at the library, sponsored by the League of Women Voters, to enable the public to learn about the candidates for the Ames School Board. After opening statements, members of the public had an opportunity to ask questions. Local Talk reporter Gail Seiler was there to summarize for our listeners what issues were raised and what was talked about. Full disclosure, Gail has been part of a group, Inclusive Ames, that has been monitoring and making recommendations to the school board as well.
As evident in the introductory remarks that the candidates made, there were definitely some reoccurring themes, and community members followed up on some of those issues with questions specifically. For example, there were questions about the need for and the finances around building a new high school, with one community member raising questions about money spent to build the school district headquarters a few years ago. When asked about the new high school and whether we should build one, nearly all candidates said that they wanted plenty of opportunities for public input and involvement in making that decision. Gina Perez and Roy Cakerice said that they had not yet formed a decision and wanted more information. The other three candidates expressed general support for the need for a new high school. Question was asked about whether the candidates supported the requirement that all district administrators must live in the district. Monique Binken, Roy Cakerice, and Tim Rasmussen indicated that they would not support that kind of requirement. They did not think it was in the best interest of the school district, while Gina Perez and Jamette Colton said that they needed more information on that issue before making a decision on it. A theme that came up repeatedly throughout many of the comments and candidates' responses was the existence of racial disparities, particularly the gap between African American and Latino students and their white counterparts on many measures of success. This has been getting a lot of attention and concern recently, and there was one specific question about it.
I'm Stephanie Hamilton. I live here in Ames. So I know a lot of important attention is being paid now to the achievement gap, which is excellent, especially in regards to racial disparity. I also know there are a lot of factors, multiple factors, that contribute to student success. And I'm wondering, as board members, what other kinds of factors we need to look at? What kinds of things do we need to do a better job at?
Let's start with Jermaine.
Thank you for the question. The achievement gap, it's not unique to Ames. This is a national issue, but Ames can be unique in how it addresses it. We need to pay attention to the experience of every student when they cross that threshold in the building. What are they receiving? What is your culture? How are they welcomed? So there are many things. There's transportation. We need to think about, are they being able to go into extracurriculum activities in which they could belong to the community? What about advancement placement courses? Are they being considered on that? Do we have professional development for teachers? So I think the achievement gap, it covers many factors. I think we should definitely work on this. There's Cedar Rapids, Davenport, Iowa City have a comprehensive equity plan in which do I identify what the issues are, like the narrowing the achievement gap. You set goals and objectives, and then you identify who's going to be in charge of this. How are these goals going to be met? And then you have a benchmark. Were these goals met or not? And I think this is something that Ames can absolutely do.
Thank you. Gina?
I agree. I think there are several different factors, and we really need to dig deeply into what those factors entail and identify all of them. And like Jamette said, one of the things that I want to look at, too, is professional development of teachers, because this is a prime opportunity and the perfect timing and place for teachers to get the education they need for how to deal with the causes of the gap. I also think that if we set definitive, finite goals as well as deadlines, aim for the stars and see how far you can get. Shoot for higher than you can possibly imagine and see what you can accomplish.
Roy?
I've been in several school systems that have different ways of getting the achievement gaps closer. I don't know why it is that in Ames, they've been working at this quite a while, but when you have a 30% difference between the blacks and the whites, that's unacceptable. We are professionals. There needs to be ways that we can solve this problem. I would suggest to the Ames School Board that they have the vice president, Mandy, a representative of the black community, a representative of the Spanish community, few of our teachers, get in a van and go down and visit King Elementary in Des Moines or Moulton Elementary in Des Moines and see what they do. Have a discussion with people that are also trying to fight this situation. 30% difference in the upper and lower level is unacceptable in the Ames school system. We're supposed to be one of the best in the state. Let's show it and do it.
Yeah. I kind of touched on this in the opening. You know, a couple of the things that we've done that I think are a step in the right direction. There's a school improvement advisory committee that meets every year, and as far as I'm concerned, every time that I've ever gone to this, and I've done it in other districts, it's somewhat of a worthless event. It is meant to come up with goals, to report them to the state, and nobody cares if you actually meet your goals or not. This past year, we took that SIAC committee, and I believe we are the first and only school district in the state that actually put goals in our SIAC reporting that are meant to decrease the racial disparity gap in our district. It's unheard of for a district to put something like that in their goals. I sat in there on that committee, and as soon as the idea came up in our teaching and learning committee, we said, let's take it to SIAC, let's get this done. Let's be the first district, let's lead the state on this subject. I think our cultural competency plan that we have put together is going to help, and we are making strides.
Monique?
Stephanie, thank you for your question. What you asked for was really kind of just beyond the stuff we all already know, right? And what you were really asking about, what I heard you asking about, was kind of all of the vulnerable populations that exist in our district. Because there are more than just black and brown people occupying this achievement gap. You know, the better word is really an opportunity gap, but we're not going to, I don't know, 90 seconds, right? And so the way that I conceptualize what's going on is really consistent with the systems model. And what we have here really is what we're seeing is we have an inequitable institution. That's just what it is, right? The school is not functioning as an equitable institution in which vulnerable people can be successful. And so the way you fix that is you focus on several aspects of the institution. So it has to be multi-tiered. It has to be in a lot of different parts. We have work to do at the administrative level, right? We need to have diverse administrative staff, right? That needs to happen. It just needs to happen, period. There also needs to be extensive professional development that touches the administrative team.
Other interesting questions were also asked of the school board candidates at the forum on Thursday night. One question was, if they had a magic wand and could create a perfect day for themselves, what would it be like? That kind of whimsical question gave some insights into the candidates more as individuals than as candidates or political figures. At the end, the candidates were asked to give closing statements, and each was given a few minutes to do that. In this section, the facilitator did not name the candidates, so they are in this order: Jeanette Colton, Gina Perez, Roy Cakerice, Tim Rasmussen, and Monique Binken.
I'm originally from Santiago, Chile. I grew up in a dictatorship. I know what it means to not have a voice. I know what it means that it's dangerous for you to act like you have a voice. I know what it is to be that child that shows up to school pretending like nothing is going on, pretending like they're happy as can be, pretending like they're not hungry. I know. I have kept that person alive because it matters. It matters to me that community, the marginalized community, it's got a seat at the table. I love this community. I want to be that person for this community. Thank you so much for listening. You listen to me. I will reciprocate. I will love your vote on September 12th.
My parents filed for bankruptcy when I was in sixth grade. I was an at-risk kid. I had free and reduced lunch. I got picked on for wearing jeans that were too short and too nerdy. So I know what that's like. I know what it's like to have that different perspective when it comes to diversity and to get picked on for having dirt under my fingernails or wearing inexpensive clothing. I hate to see that with other kids. That being said, I'm really focused on communication. I want to get together with our teachers. I want to talk to them. I want to find out from the people that are in the trenches what the inner workings are and what needs to change. Because if they're afraid of saying something because of repercussions, they're not going to say something. So I want them to know when I talk to them, I'm not going to use that against them. The experience will be the example, not the teacher. So I also would appreciate your vote on September 12th. Thank you.
When I was on the board, I always made an effort to visit every school and talk to the teachers in the lunchroom every semester. I also, when they did surveys, those surveys ought to be given back to the administrator, because the administrator really should, in the first place, have the teachers tell him what could improve in that school. Teachers quit because they don't have the backing with various problems in that school. Let's remember the most important individual in a school system is that student. Whether it's high economic background or low economic, whether it's black, brown, white, whatever color, that student is the main reason we have schools. It's the main reason we have nice buildings for them to learn in. A teacher is the reason there are other professions. They are the root of any profession that's out there. The world isn't different because of my bank account or what kind of a car I drove or how big of a house I lived in. But the world is different because I was important in the life of a child.
One of the things that I was excited about was that I was going to work with Dan Wooden, that was the board president at that time. And Dan continuously, every time you talk to him, he'd tell you it is all about the kids. Any other answer is irrelevant. It is all about the kids. We've made a lot of great strides in the last 4 years. We took a pretty good district and we made it better over the last 4 years because it's all about the kids. We have a high school that we need to rebuild because we have more kids that are coming up and it's all about those students. It's going to be a 50-year building, so it's about generations of kids in this town. But it is all about the kids, and I would appreciate your vote to stay on the board for 4 more years. Thank you.
So I'm going to go back to Stephanie. I'm going to go back to you because I said that I would. And it's kind of related to my closing statement. So she asked the question about racial disparities. And my answer to your question is that what I heard tonight and what I hear a lot when I go around is I hear a lot of people talking about what they would do for the children. And they would focus on the children. The children aren't the problem. The issue, no matter if it's a racial or ethnic identity or an ability identity or an emotional or psychiatric issue, is that the climate that the children must function in isn't working for them. And so that means that we have to address changes at the administrative level. We need to do things at the teaching level. And yes, there are things that need to happen at the student level, but the majority of them are listening. Right? And the reason that I know this is not only because it's my area of research at Iowa State, but I live this. I grew up as a black woman in the South. I grew up in Houston, Texas. I grew up in poverty. And I was someone who was not, I didn't have a magic fairy teacher who told me I could do it. I grew up without people supporting me. I was on my own really since I was a young child. Beyond all odds, made it to college and graduate school. I understand that the issue isn't the children. The issue is the environment in which we're asking our children to function. And so part of what the school board has to do is just frankly realize that. It has to realize that, it has to own it, and it has to do the job of getting the larger community who isn't able to come to every single meeting at 6:30 every other Monday night, and who maybe don't have kids at all, to understand what it is that the district needs, because I believe every single person wants our children to be succeeding. What the role of a board director is helping communicate that vision clearly to the community. If you give me the opportunity on September 12th, what I can promise you is that I will undertake this role with the most honest and sincere responsibility. They're not just my children in the district, but they're your children as well. And I'm really just so fortunate and grateful to have been here tonight and had this opportunity.
After listening to the forum and hearing from all five candidates, it seemed that the most recurring theme was communication and the need to improve communication, whether it was the need for community input on specific issues, better communication at actual board meetings, or a process for input from teachers where they felt that they could offer their experiences and their needs and discuss what's going on in the schools without the fear of repercussions. A number of the candidates talked about those various kinds of communication issues throughout their statements and responses. It's interesting that what was not mentioned was the need for communication with students. In other words, input from students in the schools who are impacted by school policies and the day-to-day working of the schools. Maybe that need for student input will come up in the next forum.
And the next school board forum will be sponsored by the Ames Progressive Alliance on Tuesday, September 5th at the Ames Library, and all local school board elections will be held the next week on Tuesday, September 12th. Thank you very much to Gail Seiler for that report on the meeting that just happened last week at the Ames Public Library, sponsored by the League of Women Voters.
Swift, rocks are ancient, mountains are high, oceans gray, winds are restless, trees are patient, you my child are away. Waves are crashing, rivers churning, planets twirling, stars ablaze. Storms are raging, atoms whirling, you, my child, far away. To perceive these wondrous things, blackbird's wings, tell a story and dance and sing.
Awake by Peter Mayer. I want to dedicate that song to the people of Texas, particularly in the Houston area, who are in the path of Hurricane Harvey. Our thoughts are with you. People need help. Waters are rising. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. Rebecca Reuter is KHOI's assistant manager at the station, and really enjoyed working with her, and she's training for an upcoming marathon in Wisconsin, and we've all noticed that it's really interesting to hear how she speaks about running. So we asked her to share with you some of what she has learned and what the sport means to her in terms of enjoyment and philosophy, and so here's just a few words from Becca, our runner, and she sat down with Kay Patak.
I'm talking with Rebecca Reuter, who happens to be our administrative assistant here at the studios, but she is a runner.
I am.
The marathon. Would you like to Tell us about that.
So I will be running a marathon, my first marathon, on October 1st of this year. That's going to be the Milwaukee Lakefront Marathon. I think that's what it's called. Either the Milwaukee Lakefront or Milwaukee Lakeshore Marathon. Let's go with Milwaukee Lakefront Marathon. So 26.2 miles, and that is conveniently on my 27th birthday.
Should
be interesting.
That's interesting, yeah. So you'd be 27. So you've been running from the time you're about 10 up till now, and you're almost 27.
Yeah.
That's a lot of running.
It is a lot of running. It's a lot of pain.
Becca, why did you start by telling us the history of your running? When did you start? How old were you? And so on.
Well, I started doing track in grade school, around 5th grade, 9 or 10.
Okay.
Possibly 11. I kind of forget how old kids are supposed to be at that age. But in high school, I started doing cross country a lot more. It's one of those sports that becomes an option once you get to high school, at least where I was from in southeastern Wisconsin. And I was pretty good with it. I didn't particularly try to be the best. I didn't try for states. There were certainly runners on my team that were much faster than I was, and others on my team that were much slower. So I kind of just hung out in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly preferred to run by myself, again, because everyone was either slower or faster than me. So I just got used to running by myself, being in my own head. And so I did that for 4 years in high school. For 3 of those years, I had a really excellent coach, Mr. William Dinnigan, an Irish fellow. He was a lifelong runner, had done a bunch of marathons, so he was pretty inspirational. And once I got to undergrad and grad school here at Iowa State, I didn't run to compete so much, more as a sad attempt to relieve stress and stay active, as they say.
Did you find it helpful for stress release? They say any exercise is.
Yeah, for me personally it is, just because of the way I am. I'm a bit of a kinesthetic and visual learner, so I learn by doing things with my hands. And so in order to relieve stress or brainstorm, running is pretty good for me. And I prefer to run without music. I've tried running with an iPod, either to music or podcast, but I never could. It just always bothered me, the strings, and it was like distracting. It was too distracting on my runs.
Right. And if you're running in a sort of country place, you can't hear the natural sounds too, I suppose.
Yeah, natural sounds. And for me, especially now that I'm older, it's become a lot more like a conversation between myself and my body, and a conversation between my body and the earth, and then myself and the earth. It's like there's like three conversations going on. And,
can you say a bit more about that?
It's probably got to do with my pagan sensibility. I identify as a pagan person.
Mm-hmm.
And in paganism, there's, well, kind of depends on what flavor you adhere to, but for me, I find that the way I speak to the elements helps me connect more with the elements, fire, water, air, spirits, and when you sweat, that's a lot of water coming out of your body, and the way you breathe, the weather going on that day. Yeah.
And the way your feet connect with the earth.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, a lot of people are getting into barefoot running now.
Yeah.
You know about that.
So much about barefoot running. Not that I'm an expert, just want to put that disclaimer out there, but I have a bachelor's of industrial design from Iowa State, and during my industrial design degree, one particular project was on biomimicry. So I created sprinting shoes that reflected the toe to heel bit of barefoot running. So basically, the whole idea is that, well, humans evolved to be runners, Lots of ancient tribes had clothing from really fast animals. Like, how do you catch that? Well, you run, and you keep running. And, I mean, humans can run for hundreds of miles and be perfectly fine. We sweat. So if you were to just go out for a run and not really think about things too much, your foot will naturally do like a toe-to-heel or a midfoot-to-heel strike on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is that the impact is going through your muscles and not so much your bones.
Mm-hmm.
So shoes that really stress, shoes that tend to have a lot of cushion, you know, like a bigger heel, that kind of tends to be worse for you when you
run. Well, they're often quite stiff and you can't put your foot down in the way that you've described. Mm-hmm. You tend to put your heel down first. Mm-hmm. You have to with those, with most of the shoes I've experienced.
I mean, and it's not to say that heel-toe running, like you wouldn't eventually do that. You know, when I go on my longer runs, my gait changes, you know, mid-foot to heel or heel to toe, like that changes.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of has to, you know, otherwise you're just going to wear yourself out. It's kind of like when you stand for a long time and you shift positions, it's kind of the same way with running. You got to shift positions. It's very painful when you're 10 miles in and you got to switch a little bit. But yeah, so barefoot running has been a pretty big thing, you know, with the whole minimalist movement, but that's been going on in a lot of aspects of our culture. But, you know, like with running, you got to be careful with it. And I guess if I had to, you know, focus in on one point about running is that running is not faster walking, which I think really trips people up sometimes. I've been thinking about this a lot lately because, you know, a lot of people ask me about the marathon and my training and whatnot. And a lot of stories come up saying, oh, you know, I ran for a while, then I got injured, or like, oh, all that running's bad for your joints. Well, you know, so is sitting for 8 hours a day. That's
right.
Pretty bad for you. So, yeah, running is not faster walking. If you go into it with that mentality, you're going to get injured. You have to learn how to manage your injuries. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just going to throw your stream of consciousness off more. Oh, but
it's already off. My stream of consciousness is always off.
I'm interested in these shoes you designed. Were they ever marketed?
Oh, no, this was an undergraduate theoretical project, yeah.
What's the name of that? Jack's, that store out on, is it Lincoln Way?
Yeah.
They, I don't know if they still have them, but they had shoes where they looked almost like feet.
Yeah, five-finger toe shoes. Those are Vibrams.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's the name brand, Vibrams, five-finger toe shoes. They also make regular shoes. I have a pair, so I flip between three pairs of shoes during my marathon training. I have Vibrams for my shorter runs, which these days my shortest run during the week is about 5 miles. And then I have a pair of, like, Nikes. And they have a rather minimalist sole. And I use those. I use those when I ran my half marathon. And then I have a pair of Asics that are about half a size bigger. I bought them for trail running, and they're also really good for 13, 18-mile runs.
What's your longest run? Your shortest run is 5 miles, you said.
Yeah, right now, the way my running plan is set up, actually tomorrow I get to run 19 miles.
19?
Yeah. Now that's not my peak either. My peak will be 20 miles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we're recording this on Friday. Tomorrow is Saturday. I will be running 19 miles tomorrow, and if I can maintain a 10-minute per mile average, I will get it done in about a little over 3 hours. I think I have to start at 5:30. I would like to get done at 8:30, but realistically, I'll probably get done around 9. Honestly, for long runs, I don't stretch. The best stretch is to just walk.
So you just start out your run by walking.
Yeah, running, and, you know, on the subject of running is not faster walking. Running is not, you know, explicitly a painless sport, you know, especially if you're training for something in particular. There's good pain and there's bad pain. You know, when you go for a long hike or a long walk and you get done with the day and you got that nice soreness.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's various types of pain. There's pain that you have to learn how to deal with on your run. You know, if you're 8 miles into a 19-mile run and all of a sudden, like, your right foot has these sharp shooting pains, you got to try to figure out what that is. And you know, what if I start running heel to toe for a little while? Does that go away? Or what if I slow down for a little bit? Maybe I'm dehydrated and I just need a swig of water. Or, you know, the longer your runs go, you know, you have to actually bring food with you.
Right.
Not food. When you go on these long runs, you're essentially forcing your body into fight or flight mode.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens? Well, your digestion stops. So if you were to bring, like, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwich or something, that's just going to sit in your stomach and make you feel gross. When you eat something like, I eat Swedish fish that I got at Wheatsfield, like the organic kind, like the candy.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Just sugar or Lifesavers. It keeps your blood sugar up. That's what you want. You want to keep your blood sugar up. And it tricks your body into tapping into another food source in your body. I forget the name, but it's, I think it starts with a G.
Is it glycogen?
I think so. That it's sort of the thing, the science behind exercising while in the fasted state.
Now, marathons, it's named after this place in Greece where someone ran to say the Persians were coming, or we've defeated the Persians, and he ran. I think. Do you know that story?
Yeah, I do know the story, and there has been speculation as to what exactly the distance was. They had measured the distance, and the funny thing about the distance is that it's changed over the years. So there was the distance that the messenger ran. You know, he ran from point A to point B, and then he died.
Right.
Presumably, he was running really, really, really fast and died of exhaustion because, right, again, humans can run for hundreds of miles and be perfectly fine.
Well, it might be just a legend that he died. Maybe he didn't really
die. Maybe that too. But I think it was, oddly enough, Britain that came up with some sort of arbitrary number based on something nonsensical. It was like, oh, from here to here, that's going to be the marathon. Hooray! And then it changed a couple times. It's actually been a couple different distances in, like, the official Olympics. And they did end up settling on 26.2, and I cannot remember exactly why. But I do, I looked it up and everything, too, because I was interested, you know, where this number come from. And fun fact, ultra marathons are anything over any distance over 26.2 miles. So some people associate 50 or 100 miles, but they can be like 30 or 40.
Okay, so it varied. And tell us again, how long is this marathon you'll be doing on your 27th birthday?
26.2.
Oh, that works out beautifully then, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Well, good luck with that, Becca.
No, thank you, Kay.
And thank you so much for talking to us today.
Of course, this glad to inspire.
Good luck in that marathon.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you to both Becca Reuter and Kay Patak for that story. This is Local Talk, and I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Allison Walter from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau comes by KHY once a month to give you a preview of events to enjoy in central Iowa in the upcoming few weeks. And she came last week and spoke to Kay, and here's what they had to say.
Welcome, Allison, from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Thank you.
You've got news for the fall season for us.
I do. Yes. You know, August and September bring the start of a new school year, all the Iowa State sports team schedules. And so, you know, if we have Iowa State football, 61,000 fans come on a game weekend and bringing Cyclone spirit. And if football's not your thing, game time, it's a great time to explore all the dining experiences that you can find in Ames.
When the game's actually going on, that'd be a good time to get out and
Enjoy a little bit quieter town, definitely. The Stevens Performing Arts Series will be starting at Iowa State Center. They have highly acclaimed Broadway shows, internationally renowned choirs, symphonies, ballets, and more. They're offering pre-show dinners and special performances to add to the experience.
Those are dinners at C.Y. Stevens itself?
The dinner is at Sheman before.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And so easy to have dinner at in the Sheman building and then walk across to Stevens for the performance.
These C.Y. Stevens events really are very varied. As you said, Allison, the Moscow Ballets, is it Giselle, and the Des Moines Ballet, the Wizard of Oz, the Vienna Boys Choir, the Right Stuff, First in Flight about the Wright Brothers, A Night with Janis Joplin, really varied things.
Very varied. It should be a very good season, quite a variety. So you're sure to find something that you'll like. Of course, this fall, ISU will be celebrating their homecoming. It is called Sound the Siren this year.
Yeah, I noticed siren is spelled C-Y-R-E-N.
Yes. You know, just like our Sights of Ames website, we all are taking on that C-Y for our favorite mascot, Cy. The homecoming events will include honors and awards ceremony, a parade downtown on Sunday to kick off the week, a pep rally, mass campanelling, and fireworks on Friday evening.
What exactly is mass campanelling?
Campanelling is being kissed under the campanile at midnight.
Which
and that's your true
what?
Love.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The University Museums will open some new exhibits this fall. A new portrait exhibit, Faces of Iowa State, Amy Worthen, A World Perspective, and a new gallery, the REACT Gallery, in the Christian Peterson Art Museum opens this fall as well. So be sure to stop on campus and visit one of the largest campus public art collection in the nation. And that's right here at Iowa State University. It's amazing. There's more. The Iowa State Student Union Board, or ISUSUB, or SUB, provides Iowa State campus and students with a series of diverse cultural, recreational, social, and educational entertainment options. Most of these events are also open to the public. Cyclone Cinema kicks off their movies 7 and 10 o'clock on Thursdays through Sunday, and they are recently released movies, and they're shown in 101 Carver on Central Campus.
Now, just to clarify, these are open to the general public, not just for students.
Correct. Anyone's welcome, and they do an early show at 7 and a later show at 10 each weekend. We always list the current show on our website, so you can check that out to see what's showing this weekend. And, of course, they'll have concerts, comedy, improv, and speakers, and you can find that on Iowa State's website as well as ours.
The website is Cites of Ames, spelled C-Y-T-E-S of Ames, all one word.
Right. Very good. Firefly Country Nights is coming back to downtown for their second evening this summer. And it will kick off the Cyhawk weekend on September 8th. And they're going with a Main Street tailgate theme since it's a big football weekend. You can enjoy beer, food, and a concert by Kanan Smith. It's 5 to 9:30 on Main Street, and admissions and concession fees, of course, apply. So go to the Ames Downtown website and you can buy your tickets there, amesdowntown.org. And also, Monarch Migration Madness. Fall is one of the world's greatest animal migrations. Witness an animal that weighs less than a small paperclip on its journey south to Mexico. Learn about monarch butterflies on September 10th at the Conservation Center at McFarland Park. It's an event hosted by Story County Conservation, and they manage natural resources, provide recreational and leisure opportunities, and education. Their website is storycountyiowa.gov. Of course, we always have Oktoberfest on Main Street. You get to enjoy live polka music, dancing, great German food, and Guten Tag games. September 16th is the date. It's held in the Main Street Cultural District. It is a 21-plus event with the craft beer sampling beginning at 10 a.m., games and other festivities starting around 2 o'clock, and that's Oktoberfest on September 16th. And one of the great events downtown is the Octagon Art Festival each fall. Join 14,000 of your closest friends at the 47th annual Octagon Arts Festival. It will be Sunday, September 24th from 10 to 5. There'll be over 100 professional artists from across the Midwest who produce and display high-quality artwork in a variety of media, all for sale right here on Main Street in Ames, Sunday, September 24th from 10 to 5. So there's lots going on all month long, and we hope that you will get out and enjoy and share the place we love with the passion of visitors. You can see a full listing of all of the things to eat, do, and shop in Ames and the surrounding community by checking out our website, as you mentioned, sitesofames.com, spelled C-Y-T-E-S of Ames.com. Thank you and enjoy the fall.
Thank you very much, Allison Walter, from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau.
And you have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us. Earlier in the show, you heard a report on the school board election with excerpts from the August 24 debate held at the Ames Public Library, recorded by Gail Seiler, and conversation with Rebecca Reuter, who is actually the assistant manager here, but in this case, she talked about her preparations for running a marathon and shared her insights and knowledge about running. Our show was engineered engineered today by Cynthia McClure. Thank you. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And you also heard Awake by Peter Mayer. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. We thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.